Welcome back to another edition of Irish Illustrated Insider. I'm Tim O'Malley, joined today by Tim Priester and Drew Mentock of Irish Illustrated, John Bryce of Football Scoop and Irish Illustrated. And we had a podcast yesterday detailing CJ Carr winning the bit of a surprise, of course, at the end of the competition that CJ Carr emerged as QB1. So today we're going to switch gears a little bit and talk about some camp champs, if you guys would like. Appreciate the alliteration going through again. And I'd mentioned earlier to you guys, I thought maybe Gerby Lambert, considering injury 4 months ago, we didn't even know if he'd be ready for camp, much less to start a game against Miami in the opener. Gerby Lambert starting at right guard rather than a tackle position. One of the major surprises. Tim Priester, I'll let you go to that one first, but also we'll get into, I overlooked this one a little bit. He's the camp champ, but Will Pauling being named the captain. Did you have that on your bingo card in March?
No, definitely not. Didn't have it on July 31st, but after a couple of weeks, you know, we did. When you hear how Marcus Freeman spoke about him and JB's story about, you know, Pauling the Goog rat, it all kind of made sense. But yeah, definitely a surprise. But Lambert, I wrote yesterday, or I put on our message board that Lambert will be in the starting lineup. We expect him to be in the starting lineup. And, you know, I think in an effort to get your best five players on the field, I think Gerby Lambert, as long as he was healthy, and we didn't think that he would be when camp opened, but he was. And so he's made great progress. I think that's the right guy for the starting lineup. And as I said before, Sullivan Abshire as the sixth man or the first guy off the bench can play any of those positions. So it puts Notre Dame in a pretty good situation.
Yeah, this is a staff that's always going to try to get its best players on the field, regardless of position. I think we're all in agreement that not only is Gerby Lambert positioned to be one of the best five next week, but he's probably one of the best three or four, period, regardless of health status of a Charles Jagasaw or anyone. And I'll still wonder if he would have been the starting left tackle if he'd been healthy in spring, if he'd been able to unseat Anthony Knapp. And I still think his future is probably at one of the tackle positions ultimately long term, but significant that he's positioned himself this way. And then also ultimate positional flexibility, as you alluded to, TP, with Sullivan Abshire. And we've seen him work at center, guard, and tackle over the past few months. We know he can play any of those. We know he can play on either side of the line, left guard, right guard, whatever. So I think that this gives Notre Dame its best six players for the offensive line when the season opens, ready to play where they need to play. And then, yeah, Will Pauling, you know, we've seen the quarterbacks come in and earn captain status as grad transfers, but very, very impressive for Will Pauling there. And I know Drew has some thoughts on that as well.
Yeah, to what you said, I think you mentioned that each of the last 2 years, a transfer quarterback has been named a captain. Last year, Leonard, I think, was the only offensive captain. And then Alohi Gilman was a captain back in the day, but that was after he had transferred as a undergraduate and been here for a few years. So it's really unprecedented, at least in Notre Dame, for a guy to come in January and earn the respect of his teammates. Again, this is something they vote on. He also had to have the, you know, confidence to recommend himself. Like, you have to put yourself up to be captain too. So it's for him to feel like, I'm this much part of the team, I've earned this. And then the teammates reward that, I think, is really significant. And he must also be doing it on the field. They're not going to just let a guy come in who's not making plays and doing all those other right things too. So I think that I'm probably maybe reading a lot into it, but I think that's really significant just looking at the history of that. And then I agree with Lambert. He's a guy, if you can get him on the field and start getting him some of those early reps in game experience and stuff, like wherever he ends up down the road, that's going to really start paying off.
I think, guys, if you look at the depth chart, Eli Raridan at the top was probably the camp's number one story offensively. Eli Raridan was lauded by Mike Denbrock. I think all of us expect big things from him. And maybe if you're looking at a riser, Nolan James Priester is the notable riser. Now, of course, a little of that had to do with Aeneas Williams injuring his elbow, but we heard good things about James prior to that.
Yeah, definitely. Nolan James is put together. I know that, like, our first reaction when we saw him when he came to Notre Dame was, wow, how big is he? But he's added on weight. He's a warrior. You know, I think he's in a position to get number three reps. We talked about this the other day because it was mentioned his ability in a passing game. Does that mean actually catching it or blocking it? It's maybe both, but it probably is, blocking it if they're talking about him being on the field. And as it relates to Raridan, is there a bigger drop-off at any position on this Notre Dame team from first team to second team when you talk about tight end and Raridan? I don't think so. If you had Cooper Flanagan, you wouldn't feel that way.
No, yeah, we wouldn't.
But I think that that's a large drop off. So it's imperative that Eli Raritan stays healthy this year.
Yeah, well, I think the drop off is not only more pronounced because of Cooper's injury, but because Ty Washington has been banged up and not gotten very much work the last 10 days of camp. And then, of course, on Nolan James, he has flashed. We've heard he's an option on kickoff return as well and has shown some things there. And it's not just been Aeneas's banged up elbow. It's been losing Kedron Young for the year as well to an ACL injury. But Aeneas hurt that, as we've discussed ad nauseum on the Friday practice at School Field here in South Bend, and then banged it up again, I think, pretty significantly this past Sunday in the Jersey scrimmage. And so that's something that Notre Dame's trying to monitor and manage as best as possible before that opener, because we know what Aeneas can do in pass pro. We know what he can do sliding out of the backfield on some of those rail routes or wheel routes. And we know he's a valuable, rugged, tough runner. And I think this is a running back room right now that feels, especially with Aeneas healthy, the top four are unquestioned Love, Price, Williams, and James. And Williams and James might be interchangeable at the three spot. But I don't think there's much meat on the bone for anybody beyond those four in the running back room.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think you look at the running back room, I think it just speaks to just how deep it is. Like, it's kind of incredible that you can have this guy come in and kind of make such an impact early. But yeah, I think that's really impressive. And I know you mentioned Jason Anye. Like, I think too, like, him coming in and just really showing like he can come back from what he had to overcome and not only do that, but start thriving. And I mean, I think you're really seeing the benefit of the culture and the team being so supportive of him and him stepping away and then letting, you know, accepting him right back in when he needed to, and the benefits of that. I mean, clearly, you know, mentally he's in a much better place, and I think you're starting to see the fruits of that, and that should hopefully for the team pay off well in week one.
You know, I think it would have been fair to discuss the defensive interior. There will be a heavy rotation, I think, but we all got together and said, all right, name your starting nose tackle, defensive tackle, and their backups. July 30th, we might have said Gabriel Rubio and Jared Dawson, backed by Donovan Heinisch and Jason Onye in that order. And it seems like it's Jason Onye and Donovan Heinisch backed by those two. It's when, you know, backup is different at defensive tackle, as Marcus Freeman said, than it will be at quarterback or right guard. But kudos to Onye and Heinisch, because I think outside the coaching staff, and even maybe the coaching staff for Onye, most people wouldn't think you'd be lauding Jason Onye as a clear starter in the summer.
No,
going into this in game one,
you know, I'm still the mindset, let's see it in a game, but sure. Obviously he's doing great things on the practice field. And Tim, it goes back to the point that you've made a couple times in previous podcasts about how the reps at tackle are divvied up. If it's even or fairly even between the first teamers and the second teamers. And I think that's an ideal situation. If it's one sided, like it was, or would have been had, you know, Mills and Cross remained healthy throughout the whole year, that's one thing. But I think it will be evenly distributed. And, you know, if you could, like, if you're, okay, here comes Notre Dame's number two defensive tackles, you know, Dawson and Rubio, I think that speaks that speaks pretty highly of the depth there. But again, we've talked about defensive tackle. There was a podcast a couple of weeks ago where we were like, man, I don't know about the defensive tackles. And it, you know, you just kind of roll with the information that you get as you move along. And it's, I think it's, you know, from my perspective, looking better at defensive tackle than maybe I thought 10 days ago.
I think it's fair to say, before we switch gears a little to the back end of the defense, when we say defensive tackle is a concern, we're also going by winning playoff games and comparing it to the running backs room. If you're rankings, you can't say the defensive tackle, you don't see the defensive tackles the same way you see the running backs, the linebackers, and the corners. So if you're listing something, defensive tackle is naturally going to fall into the back half of Notre Dame's 9 or 10 position groups. Defensive end would be ahead of it as well, right? I think that's
absolutely,
you got to take it with a grain of salt where someone's like, well, they're down to the defensive tackles. That's the second most important position. It's because a lot of position groups are really good. It's another way of looking at it. JB, I want to throw it to you because I think Priester and we talked a lot about Stroman, you know, seemingly winning the job, but of course it's going to be a rotation there. We have questions. I'm not sure any of us can, a question I'm not sure any of us can answer yet is, how has the safety rotation impacted game one and two when Schuler has to take a break? In other words, Stroman, I assume, can call things on the back end, and Mike Mickens said all four of those guys can, Talich and Tate Johnson, but it's a 70-snap game in the humidity of Miami. Hopefully Schuler gets 4 snaps off, 5 snaps off, because otherwise it could be a rough end of that game it'll be interesting to see who comes in for Shuler if Stroman stays in.
I think it will be situational. I think it will be situational based on kind of where things are in the game and where the defense is at on the field, and the dynamics and circumstances of the game will kind of tell that. I know, you know, Luke Talich is a former quarterback. He's very comfortable calling the defense. So I would say he's probably the second most comfortable calling the defense behind Adon Shuler, or equal to. And then Stroman has made great strides in that regard over the course of the camp. And then Tay-Tay Johnson certainly is coming along there. But Stroman is the longest of the bunch there at like 6'4" and right at 210 pounds. And he's really good in the box, as we saw in the blue and gold game. He's probably a little bit better in run support than you probably go with maybe a Tay-Tay Johnson if it's a more obvious passing situation.
In addition to being told yesterday that Gerby Lambert was going to start, I was also told that Jalen Stroman will start. I'm not as sure about that as I am with Gerby Lambert, but that's a guy with a ton of experience, hitting ability. You know, I speculated the other day that Stroman would take over for Shuler and then Telich would come in, or, you know, we don't know yet. We don't quite know yet how Tay Johnson's going to funnel in there, but it's a good situation. We know Shuler's a captain for a reason. Played, you know, I know that there were times last year where he's a little bit inconsistent, but he was a redshirt freshman starting for the first time. And I thought he showed himself extremely well. And we voted him, what, third, Tim, on the counting down list?
He had a third. I don't think I had him that high, but our staff, the four of us did.
I had him high. I don't remember exactly, but I must have been.
I had Jagas up third, so we need to rearrange that one for now.
Yeah, but, you know, I had him third, but he just averaged out to there.
Well, yeah, that means he was average, very top. He was top five for all of us, is basically what that
right.
Just for the final camp, kind of camp risers here, it's not rising above the starters. Trust me when I say that. And Mike Mickens made this as clear as day, because there was definitely a story. There's definitely people trying to write a story about the two freshman corners who have done a great job. And looks like Zachary and Golden coming in. And of course, Cree Thomas is there too. They like those guys as backups. But Mike Mickens used this exact, if you're watching on Zoom, he said, here, Gray and Leonard Moore, and he went all the way down here for the freshmen, but they really like what they've seen in camp from Zachary and Golden.
Go ahead, guys.
Yeah, exactly. Very much those two, especially. Now, Carson Hobbs, I think, close camp, much stronger. I was told he had some nice moments in the jersey scrimmage on Sunday, and this is one of those, we'll have to see it in a game to know it's real, but I was told that Sean Sevillano did show up multiple times on Sunday and made his presence felt, and did a nice job of plugging the line and being active there and getting off some blocks. So that would certainly, if he becomes a true rotational factor, that would change my opinion of where I rank or what I expect of Notre Dame's defensive tackles. And I would be honest in saying right now that I would probably have Notre Dame's defensive tackles alongside the specialist as the most that we need to know about, the most that we need to learn. I would feel really good about the other eight position groups, or however many you want to call it. But I think, to me, going into the season, the two biggest question marks are, how does Notre Dame hold up on the defensive interior? Do they get a sixth rotational guy that proves consistent, that they can get 14, 16 snaps from every game? And is Notre Dame not even consistent from 50 and in on field goals, but is Notre Dame consistent from 44 and in, or 40 and in on field goals? And then just James Rendell pick up where he left off the back half of last season. But yeah, those two freshmen have really impressed. We've heard Zachary could be a guy in punt return as well. And then Carson Hobbs would be the third one there in that mix that I think has done some good things in fall camp.
Yeah, very quickly, sorry to interrupt, Drew, but I have Carson Hobbs already a given in that group. I mean, Carson Hobbs is the first field corner off the bench for Christian Gray, and he's the first nickel off the bench for Devontae Smith. I just think that when you're repping two, you know, they're nickel. So when you're going twos out there, Hobbs is with Zachary and Golden, but he's inside. And Hobbs, you have to see it again on the field, but Priester, my streak of asking Marcus Freeman, are you getting a graduate transfer nickel, may end if Carson Hobbs can prove he can be the nickel next season.
Yeah, I think he's, you know, he's trending. I think it's been a little bit up and down for, as it often is for a young player. We've talked about it. He came into a interview session pretty brash, talking about his speed and what have you. And We heard him cut down to size a little bit later, but you know, a real talent, and you know, finding quality nickels is not easy to do.
No.
Drew, remember the first practice on July 31st, it wasn't a good day for Carson Hobbs in coverage, but I think, you know, where he struggled that day, I think generally has been his strength, which is why he's playing a nickel. So high hopes for him. He's a guy that, you know, plenty of time to round into a ball player, and then, you know, a year this year to kind of intern behind Devontae Smith.
Yeah, and I think it's significant too, given how much they've praised those freshman corners. I mean, I've talking to Dallas Golden before the season, he has experience at nickel a little bit in high school, was willing to play that. Mark Zachary seems like that's a great place for him too. So the fact that, based on talking to both of them, that's not a place they've tried them yet, must mean they have some indication.
Yeah,
Zachary so, was after this, you know, kind of rough start, because it would make sense. You like these two freshmen. Why aren't you cross training them there if you feel like that's a need? And so far, it doesn't seem like they're doing that.
Zachary was during the recruiting process, we heard a lot about him being a nickel. So that absolutely is going to be, will be in play moving down the road.
Yesterday on IrishIllustrated.com, Tim Priester had a story about Chris Ash, who was on everyone's mind because Al Golden was the best assistant coach in America last year, and Chris Ash will be leading that unit into two very tough games to start the year. So Priester went to a coach that knows a little bit about offense, defense, special teams, and Chris Ash, his former boss at Ohio State, Urban Meyer. Tim, it was an enjoyable read. So what are your takeaways from that?
Yeah, I got a couple other comments from him in today's Thursday Thoughts, but yeah, first of all, Urban Meyer, I know, you know, mixed feelings from a lot of people on him, but 187-32. Are you kidding me? I mean, 3-0 in national championship games, 9-2 in major bowls, 11-3, I think, overall in bowl games. But he talked about Chris Ash. He hired Chris Ash. He was impressed with him. He went back to, you know, he talked about 2012, when he was at Ohio State, just had taken over the job at Ohio State. They're playing Wisconsin at Camp Randall, game 11 of the season. And Ohio State takes a 14-0 lead at halftime, and they do not score in the second half against Chris Ash's Wisconsin defense. Ohio State scored in overtime to beat them. But he just talked about, you know, that he's an ultimate pro. Urban Meyer talked about how difficult it was preparing for him that day, and then equally difficult actually on the field. But, you know, I thought some other interesting things. Ash describe Urban Meyer, the guy that I knew, you know, when I met him when he was 32 years old and the receivers coach at Notre Dame. And Ash said he appreciated Urban Meyer's focus, and there was complete clarity as to how he ran his program. He didn't care about what you were doing on your free weekend. He wasn't asking anybody what they were doing on vacation. He expected them to work. And Ash was one of those guys. And to hear Urban Meyer talk about Chris Ash, it's, you know, I thought it was something really interesting for Notre Dame fans to read, because you know, he just speaks very highly of him. He, you know, when it was a ill-gotten attempt at coaching Jacksonville in the NFL, but he brought in Urban Meyer brought in Chris Ash as his safeties coach in 2021. So you know, I asked Urban Meyer if Chris Ash would, how aggressive he would be defensively. And he said, well, it depends upon the personnel. He was able to be very aggressive at Ohio State because they had good players. And I said, well, if you follow that line of thinking, he should be very aggressive this year because Notre Dame's back end of the defense. And that's what Meyer said, that if you're back end of the defense, if you feel you can take chances up front, you know, then you are aggressive. And so I think that's exactly what will happen. And another thing that Urban Meyer said about him is that he's a phenomenal teacher, which is huge. And the story that I wrote yesterday, you know, I talked about Brian Van Gorder. Brian Van Gorder had a tremendous knowledge of football, maybe as good as anybody, but he didn't know how to teach it. I had an algebra or some math class teacher in high school that was brilliant, but he didn't know how to communicate his message. Urban Meyer says that Chris Ash is very, very good at communicating the message to his defensive players, which is always huge.
Drew and JB, I think we know the challenge going to the first game, but what are reasonable expectations when you're taking over a a defense that's this good, but you are looking at film from how many different teams for the Miami opener? I know that that's being worked on by the South Bend Tribune. You can tell by the line of questioning, but this is a, I know Mike Mickens said you do that in every opener. This seems excessive, actually, what they what Notre Dame has to look at to prepare for Miami.
Yeah, I mean, the good thing is, I've touched on this before, Notre Dame's already seen a lot of Carson Beck in its preparations for Georgia in the Sugar Bowl. And yeah, they didn't play Carson Beck in the Sugar Bowl, but he had helmed the offense for all but one half of the Georgia football season up until that point in 2024. So that's significant, in my opinion, that they've already got some familiarity there. And then on the flip side of it, they've looked at a lot of Minnesota defense for the Notre Dame offense, because Corey Heatherman is now running things for the Canes. And to Notre Dame's credit, it has dramatically grown its off the field staff size in recent years since Marcus Freeman took over. It's much larger, both in terms of analysts and in terms of the personnel department, than it was the day that Marcus was named head coach in December of 21. And so those are things that helps even out the workload. Those are things that help Notre Dame find more video footage of those guys, whether it's the offensive linemen that now constitute the majority of Miami's O-line, or whether it's looking at different things that Carson Beck has done, or some of those wide receivers. But the main thing is, on offense, it's still Shannon Dawson, and it's still going to be his offense. And so you've not only got his work at Miami, but his work at Houston before that. So that will be the majority of what they're looking at there, in addition to what they already know about Carson Beck. And what's realistic is he still inherits a very, very good defense. So realistic, I would think, is a top 15 defense this year. And that's probably being pretty super conservative, because I think this is an elite defense at every single spot on the defensive side of the ball, except for defensive tackle. And I don't think it's substandard there. We just don't know, again, the depth of it there.
Yeah, I agree. I think my expectation, especially going into game one, is that he's going to have a really aggressive, disruptive defense. I mean, Miami, you look at SP Plus, they have Miami as the best returning offense in college football. I think they're going to make plays, like, even for as good as this Notre Dame defense is. But I think what will be key is he's going to stress this kind of team that's just, this offense is just gelling together, as you guys talked about, with all the transfers and whatnot. And they're going to make mistakes. He's going to hope to turn them over and put them in uncomfortable positions. And that's kind of my expectation, is to see that aggressiveness play out. And I kind of think that's the direction it's going to go. And something I kind of want to add to TP's story, I think he mentioned in it that, you know, Urban Meyer doesn't really throw out compliments, you know, just because that's a guy who coached with him. And kind of shameless plug, but Irish Illustrated Interviews podcast is something we launched recently on here, so check it out if you haven't. But I recently interviewed Matthias Farley for that, and he actually had Chris Ash as his DB's coach in Las Vegas in 2022. And unprompted, he just brought up Chris Ash and raved about him. And what I thought was really interesting is he talked about how at the NFL, like, coaches often become your coworkers. And there's not really much of a relationship at times. And he's like, Chris Ash is a guy who absolutely cared about his players. And like, that really helped with that dynamic. And I think that's interesting, because in my interactions with him in press conferences, that doesn't really come through. I hear him yelling on the field and stuff. But I think it was really interesting, for even at that level, for that care to come through, which I think also goes into the teaching stuff. If you think the guy cares, he can teach you a lot better, because you are willing to take some of that criticism.
Well, I think, I don't want to use the word unique, but it's definitely relevant that someone at the pro level shows that type of caring, because you demand it from college coaches. You have to, with 18 to 22 year old kids. But that can't be the norm at the pro level, that someone's takeaway is he cared about us as people, because, well, you've heard other stories about the pro level, and it just doesn't seem like that would be it. We cycle through a lot of stories at Irish Illustrated, but Priester, your Urban Meyer, Chris Ash is the ultimate pro story, is pinned to the top if people want to check that out.
Tim, I just want, before we go pop to segment two, I'm gonna step out and let Drew express his opinions in segment two. But, you know, and we had a podcast yesterday about the quarterbacks and expressed a lot of opinions. I started, you know, digging a little bit deeper, and I, you know, like, so why did CJ Carr win the job? And I started to say to you guys before we went on the air, I think maybe the criteria has changed a little bit. You know, Notre Dame has always thrived on offensive line, defensive line driven programs. When they've been the best, it's usually when they run the ball the best and they don't throw it a whole bunch. Joe Montana threw 11 touchdown passes in 1977. I think most people would think that he had three times that. But look, Marcus Freeman's aggressive on special teams. He's aggressive on defense. And I think he wants to be more aggressive offensively. And I think the analytics that Notre Dame looked at through, preseason practice will tell you that CJ Carr is going to push the ball down the field. They got a better group of receivers. And they want to be more aggressive offensively. So, like, you know, when the news comes out, like, how in the world did he win the job, this and that? Well, you dig a little bit and you start asking questions and talk about it a little further. And I think it's an effort on Notre Dame's part and Marcus Freeman's part to just be a little bit more aggressive in what they do. And we know that CJ Carr will push the ball downfield. Will it lead to a few more interceptions? It may. Well, it almost undoubtedly will. But it will also lead to a more aggressive offense, which is, look, when Notre Dame has lost big games here in playoff games, it's usually because they don't have enough passing offense, and he's trying to change that.
Segment one was brought to you by the RV Manufactured Housing Hall of Fame in Elkhart, Indiana. In addition to the museum and various exhibition halls, the campus is open to public for free parking and is less than an hour from Notre Dame's campus, so no reservation is required. Whether you're looking to learn more about the history of recreational vehicles in the Kinland Library or simply a cost-effective, interesting place to stay on your family road trip, the RV Manufactured Housing Hall of Fame can provide exactly what you're looking for. We'll be back with segment two, burning up the boards.
We are back for segment two here on the Irish Illustrated Insider Podcast, burning up the boards. I will open the floor with the first question from JPadel10. Agree or disagree? CJ Carr is likelier to perform better at Miami than at home against Texas A&M. Miami is, of course, his first start on the road in a loud stadium. But Mike Elko's defense will be much better than Miami, and they'll have a game film on CJ to prep with, despite the advantages of it being a home game and having his first game under his belt. Gentlemen, the floor is yours.
I agree. I'm big on the film being an issue for young quarterbacks. Obviously, it is in the NFL. I think it is nowadays in college as well. That's why I still think Notre Dame is going to be able to have a strong start to the season and CJ Carr have a good year, and somewhere along the way, because this is human nature for young players and actually probably old players, but especially young quarterbacks, the dip happens. The defensive coordinator you didn't think was going to find something that is important coincides with a day where you're just a little bit off elsewhere. It's not always on the quarterback, but I totally agree that A&M will be very well prepared for CJ Carr.
Yeah, I agree. And with that, I think, as you mentioned, like, there's going to be film on him. Mike Denbrock has made it very clear before they even announce it that they're going to tailor this offense to the strengths and kind of avoid the weaknesses of whoever wins the job. And I think Miami is less equipped to maybe have the time to prepare for what they think CJ Carr's weaknesses are and also put him in those stressful positions where I think the talent and Mike Elko are absolutely going to be able to do that and have a better idea of what those are. And I just think they're really going to go at him. And I also think Texas A&M will do a much better job of making it difficult to run the ball. Whereas I think even if Miami puts a lot of resources there, that's still going to be something Notre Dame can have success with that kind of takes some of that pressure off of CJ Carr in a loud, raucous environment in Miami.
Yeah, I mean, we all have tremendous respect for Mike Elko, and that's not to say we don't Corey Heatherman. He's just not as proven or known as Elko. And then Texas A&M has one of the best linebackers in America outside of, you know, the guys that Notre Dame trots out there. And Miami, of course, has Reuben Bain and some other guys. But I'm going to disagree for the simple fact that not only will CJ Carr be playing at home and have a start under his belt, but Notre Dame has 2 weeks to prepare for Texas A&M. And I believe A&M has games both weekends. So Notre Dame staff will have two games of film on this Texas A&M defense. CJ Carr will have presumable first start jitters out of his way. He'll be much more comfortable at home. It will be under the lights. Notre Dame will have a decided and loud home field advantage. So I get the point. It's an excellent question from JPadel10, but I will be the contrarian of the three of us and disagree with you two boys.
I got to stick with my Monday musings prediction of the week that Texas A&M and Notre Dame is the lowest scoring game of the season for Notre Dame. Lowest scoring, guys, I don't want to belabor this point, but lowest scoring is defined by the lowest point total of the year for the winning team. Okay. 38-0 is not low scoring. 20-17 is low scoring. That's how I look at those things.
Our next question is from Josh Blair. What are the realistic chances of Price having more rush yards by season's end because of Love's now further involvement in the pass game?
Go ahead, JB.
I think it will be a closer 1-2 combo for the top two Notre Dame rushers on the season than it was a year ago. But Jeremiah Love is a singular player in college football this year. I don't see Jadarian Price, even though Jadarian Price is going to be an NFL player, he's not Jeremiah Love. And as much as they might toy with Jeremiah Love in the throw game some, his bread and butter is as the best running back in college football this year and one of the best in a really long time.
I agree. I do think it's more of a story than last year when they were trying to involve Jeremiah Love in the pass game. I don't know if you guys recall that from two springs ago. A lot of games have been played since then. We might not remember that, but I think sometimes you're just trying to help him become a more well-rounded football player. But the story would be if they throw some balls downfield to Jeremiah Love, because last year, one pass to Jeremiah Love over 10 yards on the entire season, incomplete. 17 out of 18 to Jeremiah Love in the screen game, and 8 of 10 to Jeremiah Love in the extended screen game, which is under 5 yards. So they just don't hit. They didn't look for Jeremiah Love downfield. Jeremiah Love catches 4 or 5 passes downfield in the first 8 weeks. That puts some stuff on film for playoff teams to deal with, because if he could be a weapon in that regard, that'd be great. I just want to see a more effective screen game probably this year from Notre Dame. They had their moments last year, of course. They had game ceiling moments with Jeremiah Love, but not all that consistent.
Yeah, I think I broke up maybe an Irish Illustrated rule here and put it at like 20%. Like, I don't think it's likely. One thing I do think, I looked at, you know, Nicholas Singleton and Katron Allen's carries and stats from last year under, you know, Jawan Sider when he was there. And Katron Allen, who he's a bigger back, and I know Nicholas Singleton at least missed one game last year, but he did have about 45, 50 more carries. Allen did. And they're finished with a few more rushing yards. I think the biggest thing is, even if, you know, Price has a good year and maybe gets more carries, I honestly think Jeremiah Love could average, you know, 8+ yards per carry this year. Like, that's always in that realm of possibility too. And if he does something like that, even if they're kind of lessening his workload a little bit in terms of being a running back, that level of efficiency is going to be hard to match in terms of overall production.
This is not a shot at Price at all, but I think the college gap from Love to Price is greater than the college gap from Singleton to Allen in their abilities too. I think Jeremiah Love is a special, unique talent, and as you guys have heard, he's the best running back I've ever seen at Notre Dame in terms of overall ability. Next question. I think this is might be aimed at JB. The Salty Jazz. Would you rather be yourself or an immortal sentient donut who successfully predicted Carr would win QB1 last weekend? it did say we riot if JB doesn't answer this question. So
I really?
Yes. Yep.
Wow.
you like yourself, JB, but I don't know. What do you think? What's the way to go here?
Would you rather be yourself or an immortal sentient donut who successfully predicted Carr would win QB1 last weekend? I don't feel like I'm Terrell Owens here to love me some me. But, you know, I don't think I want to be a donut either. I don't know what the shelf life of a donut is.
That donut,
it gets stale in a hurry. And yeah, the last thing I want our listeners to do is to find me stale. So I'm going to go with love me some me.
In the press box, the shelf life of a donut would be very low. I can definitely throw that in there.
That's an indictment on sports writers of America.
I don't mind,
it's
Drew.
That's not your pepper. Your pepper's expedite metabolism. Donuts.
Somebody offered me to meet them for peppers in Milwaukee after this. I have to grab peppers for the staff. This is going to delay my ride home, but I can't pass it up. So we're going that way.
Eat them on the drive home and see how fast you drive.
Great. From Martin Evenflow. We wake up 1-0 Monday morning. I think he means Notre Dame. Which coordinator had the best night? And I actually tweaked this. I want us all to take one coordinator. And Drew, you go ahead and choose first.
Yeah, so I'm going to maybe pick the hardest one to justify, and that's Dembrock. But I really think, like, you know, he's maybe the highest paid offensive coordinator in the sports still. Like, I think there is some pressure on him. They're going, you know, obviously he had some influence in picking this specific quarterback. And I think how he tailors the offense, you know, putting CJ Carr, even though maybe he's been mistake prone in camp, putting him in situations where he eliminates those, you know, gets the offense going. They're probably going to have to score a little bit more against Miami, given just how good their offense is, even for as good as Notre Dame's defense is. And I think they're going to have to do stuff to win this game. They can't just go out there and count on the defense to shut them out like they did in the season opener against Miami last year and just make a couple big plays. There's going to have to be some more consistency, and I think he's going to have to do a lot. And if he can do that, then I think he's going to get a lot of credit.
I will, knowing where Tim O'Malley is trending with his answer, yes. I will take Chris Ash, and I will take Chris Ash because I recently talked to somebody who worked with Chris Ash in the NFL, and he just really raved about how sharp he was. And even though he wasn't a defensive coordinator in the NFL, he had that command presence, and the staff really relied on him, and they touted his ability to see things big picture. He has a great defense, and he has a chance to make a guy really, really nervous who hasn't played football in a long time, who's coming back from an injury that required surgery and an extensive rehab and rebuilding the strength in his shoulder or elbow so that he could throw a football with velo again and all of that. And so I'm going Chris Ash. The best unit on the field Saturday or that Sunday night is going to be the Notre Dame defense. No matter who has the ball, the best unit is the Notre Dame defense. Because of that, I will go with Chris Ash because I like Denbrock a lot, and Marty Biaggi is Football Scoop's reigning special teams coordinator of the year. Denbrock won it 2 years ago as offensive coordinator in his last year at LSU. A lot of firepower on this Notre Dame staff, but give me Chris Ash.
I'm glad I got the chance to use Biaggi because I think he's going to have a few things ready for Miami in this game. I think Biaggi will... Not in all of these, because that'd be crazy. This would be like the Georgia game. But I think Biaggi will impact the game in punt block and punt because he always has something ready for punt. Also on kickoff return, there's a lot on film where we obviously Notre Dame's best return last year, but the other two best returns involve fake or reverse plays on kickoff return. I know he's liable to do that with Faison and Jeremiah Love. And I think he can pull out all the stops, especially in an opener like this. There's a lot for Miami to deal with in August. And if you're putting any young players out there, I think Marty Biaggi will have something ready for Miami and several teams this year. He really found his wheelhouse. And as we've said before, guys, Marcus Freeman empowers him to do what he wants when he feels when he can find an advantage. JB, you want this one?
Yeah, I'll take this one. That's on me. I apologize. So Irish from A2. Will the quarterback play in the first two games of 2025 be better than the first two games of 2024? I wish I was getting to answer first, but gentlemen.
Yes, I believe it will. Actually, the Northern Illinois game is, of course, the reason for that. Riley Leonard played a pretty heroic game against Texas A&M. You have to include, now in this answer, you have to include every rushing yard and first down Riley Leonard picked up against Texas A&M. So it's a little bit tougher that way, but I think CJ Carr, well, I think he has a much better chance of going 2-0 than Riley Leonard did because he did not go 2-0. So I think CJ Carr will have a better first two games than Riley Leonard. But I'm not sure he'll have a better ascent as the season continues than Riley Leonard did.
Yeah, I mean, I think Riley Leonard, after that second game against Northern Illinois, wrote in his player tribune story that he was so embarrassed that he had to ask a police officer to drive him home to his apartment from the stadium because he didn't want to interact with fans. I don't think Carr is going to feel so bad about himself that he's unwilling to show his face in public after a game. So I think that does kind of lower the bar a little bit, but I think they're playing better opponents. He knows he's going to make some mistakes, but I think he has the ability to kind of get through it.
He was 19 for 30 without a pick against Texas A&M for 158 yards, and he had 83 net rushing yards in that game in the big win against A&M. However, the next week against Northern Illinois, as we know and have talked ad nauseum, he did not run the ball in the second half against Northern Illinois, and he finished with just 16 net rushing yards and two interceptions. And the two games combined, he barely topped 300 total passing yards. Now we know what he did after that, but yes, I will say that CJ Carr absolutely will, and I will continue to stick by what I said earlier this week. If Notre Dame goes 1-0, it will go 2-0. And if Notre Dame goes 2-0, I love its chances to go 12-0.
And to put a bow on that one, Riley Leonard, about 5 yards per pass attempt in those first two games. That's not something you're going to see, I don't think, out of the CJ Carlett offense.
No.
Our next question is from SF Castillo. Will Johnson play more snaps at field versus slot this year? Will Pauling play more snaps at field versus slot this year? Surely it's not possible that both Pauling and Greathouse are mainly in the slot all year. One of them will need to play the X a lot, ?
JB, I'll be quick on this one. Pauling, Greathouse, and Faison are three guys that make two spots, and they will rotate very heavily right there because Mike Denbrock has even said our X and our slot, our field and our slot are ideally interchangeable, and I think he's finally there with those three guys.
Yep, and Greathouse has been healthy basically all camp, except when he had a concussion early on, but that was quickly recovered from. Will Pauling has great positional versatility through his career. He's very experienced. He's a veteran, so even though he's new to Notre Dame, he's not new to college football. That will give Notre Dame more flexibility, specifically Mike Denbrock more flexibility. And Notre Dame, of note, Notre Dame feels better about its second four wide receivers than it has probably at any point under Marcus Freeman, and you can do some more with your first four when you feel a lot better about your second four.
Yeah, I agree. I think it will be closer. I guess if I had to pick one, I'm going to go with more snaps at slot just because I think that is his best position, and maybe Greathouse could have more flexibility to go out given his size outside. But, Pauling was also this voted by Pro Football Focus 2 years ago as the best slot receiver in the Big Ten. So I think he adds a lot there, especially if he's kind of back to his old form from that season.
You know, what's interesting is I would have never pegged Faison for an X receiver going in, you know, until he moved, obviously. But after his freshman year, I thought he would have made his living in the slot, but he was far less in the slot than Jaden Greathouse was last year, and that will continue. Next from Irish Gambler, it was mentioned that Aeneas Williams' elbow was compared to that of a bowling ball. This is back when they were at Schoolfield, I believe, guys. Would his absence make Jeremiah Love a full-time third down back? And I'm sure that means for the opener.
Yeah, I mean, I think I was the one who was specifically told by somebody who saw the injury, and it was initially maybe that they felt it was just like a hyperextension, and then it was much worse. And we've seen him in what I call the RoboCop brace out on the field subsequently after that. And then he again re-aggravated it this past Sunday to the point that he's just sort of took his pads off and was visibly frustrated. So I would say that makes Love the primary third down back. That's not been something we've seen a lot of from Jadarian Price. I don't think Jabron Payne is going to be very much of a factor moving forward. I think Juwan Sider feels really good about four, and they hope to have Aeneas Williams ready to go for Miami. But if he's not, or if he can't be consistent as your third down guy because of the elbow, then that would leave it to Jeremiah Love.
Yeah, I think Love is the obvious answer. I mean, that's something he can do at all. But we saw against Penn State other times, like, he's still 215 pounds. Like, he can get those short yardage. He makes the right plays, is patient. I'm curious to see if, you know, Price has made a lot of progress in terms of being patient, not bouncing everything outside, which is obviously something you don't want them to do if it's third and short or something like that. So if he's made progress, he's also still pretty big running back in the sport. So I'm kind of curious if he can help with those situations, or if it's his series, for instance, he doesn't need to come off on third and short. I'll be curious to see if he's in game one, if he's progressed to the point where they feel comfortable with him in that role.
I'd be surprised, man. Love's so good at it. I'll also be surprised if Nolan James plays in game one, if Aeneas Williams isn't healthy, because I just remember Deal McCullough saying it would be coaching malpractice to put Aeneas Williams and Kedron Young in game one. And they loved Aeneas Williams in pass protection already. And Juwan Sider has, of course, mentioned it's hard to get a lot of running backs on the field. So I think pretty heavy. I think as the season progresses, that's when the depth of that room gets a little bit more important. From Indy 11, you guys have discussed the inside defensive tackle depth, sitting at a solid 4, maybe 5, and hoping down the road for a 6th. But there's not been much discussion or angst about the DE depth. There's no angst because they have depth, but this is a great question. In game one, without Botello, it seems we only have 5. Young and Burnham, who could be limited with his groin. Traore, who could reasonably be on a pitch count. Of course, Tui Halamaka and Logan Thomas, is he situational only? Kind of seems concerning considering Miami's heat.
I would say, a very valid question from Indy 11, but I also would point to the fact they can do some things off the edge with Jalen Snead, and they can do some things off the edge with KVA, Kingston Viliamu-Asa. And so, yes, the Heat is going to be an issue. They're going to have to be smart with their rotation. And we'll probably see more rotation in the first half than the second half as they try to keep their more experienced and better players on the field more in the most important half of the contest, that being the second half. But, you get worried if something happens in one of those first five. But with those five, and then again with the versatility of Kingston and with Jalen Snead, it's not at the top of my concerns list for Notre Dame.
First, I think this question is indicative of where the program has gotten, because I feel like there were years not that long ago when Notre Dame was still making playoff runs where they had maybe three defensive ends you could really rely on comfortably. So the fact that they're even with Patel out, you still have five is a good sign. And I think there's reason to be concerned slightly, but I also think like this is still a better defensive end rotation than what they had going through the playoffs last year. Like, you have all those guys are older. I think Burnham will be okay. Like, that was still a few weeks ago. They were being cautious with him. But Bryce Young is going to be a much better player. You still have Traer out there some, and he's looked great, even if they're trying to, you know, work him back to kind of the stamina he had last year. But I think overall, there's a lot to like from this. And as Bryce mentioned, there's other ways you can disrupt and mess with the passer.
And I think Bryce Young is on the verge of stardom, early stardom. And yeah, Drew, if Burnham's fine, I think Notre Dame's fine. Logan, great point by JB, though. Logan Thomas, I bet he's a first half, end of the first quarter, early second quarter, come in situations. And then in the second half, you're kind of drilling down, getting KV off the edge, getting Boubacar Traore in there as much as humanly possible. And of course, Tui Halamaka, we should never forget. Hey, JB, you can't leave until I read the final question, because it is dedicated to you guys. Chris Koziak, in need of a new game day cocktail. Gentlemen of culture, please help me out. You get to go first, Bryce, and I have an answer from Pete Sampson as well, who is not on the podcast.
Very nice. Well, for the most part, I've worked every game day, so I'm not overly familiar with game day cocktails, but the cocktail that I would recommend that I probably lean into on a Friday night before a game, if I'm not drinking bourbon on a single rock, then I will go bourbon with some fresh, really crisp ginger ale, and then not an orange peel, but get yourself an orange wedge in there and go with that. It's incredibly refreshing, especially in the opening month of the season when there's still heat. So yes, I will mimic Drew here and also issue my own shameless plug. I'm hopping directly off of this podcast to hop on to the Football Scoop podcast. We relaunched this week. I'm asking, pleading, begging for everyone to check out the Football Scoop podcast. Thank you so very much. Excellent time with you gentlemen today. And of course, Captain Jack mastering the controls.
So if it's a game day and you're making it home, the only drink I feel like I make for myself at home is usually an old fashioned. I usually use Woodford Reserve, nothing too crazy. If you're on campus and you're looking for what to drink, especially if it's like earlier in the season where it's hotter, I guess I'll give Tap House on Edge as plug. I feel like they have the Smurf drink that I don't know if they call it Papa Smurf, but it's blue. It has a cherry in it. It's probably more akin to like a Long Island, but I feel like that's good on a hot summer day. If you need something that's going to like sit well and you could go there at the start of the day, I could recommend that. They also used to say like they limit you to two. And I think that was just so they can maybe pump up how strong it is, but I don't think it's actually that strong. I think they just did it because it kind of gave it this extra like prestige, like, oh, look what they're limiting us. Why would they do that? But I think that's a local drink if you want to check it out.
You know, in South Padre in 1994 and 1995, they had something called a bucket of death, and they did not limit people to two. I think they probably should have. I would not use that on game days anymore, though, or after I was probably 22 years old. Pete Sampson chimes in. Post-game, of course, Rye Manhattan with two Luxardo cherries. Very important, an exclamation point, with an ice sphere. How are your thoughts on that? Jack Freeman, I feel like you should have unmuted your mic for this one, but I can tell you're shaking your head no. All right, for me, post-game, anybody wants to go find it, 2010 Barolo, of course. Gentlemen of culture, I thought we were talking about here, for crying out loud. That is it for this edition of Irish Illustrated Insider. Now, Marcus Freeman will speak to the media and his fans on Tuesday, August 26th, but we're coming back Monday, August 25th with our regularly scheduled podcast. Notre Dame is pushing everything back because they play Sunday. We're going to pretty much go regularly scheduled programming next week and, of course, be prepared. Marcus will talk Friday with some final updates. And on Zoom before game one, we are assuming those updates will not be revelatory. If they are, someone will jump on and make sure we have an instant analysis for that. Until next Monday, for JB, who's gone, Tim Priester, who's gone, Drew Mentock of Irish Illustrated, I'm Tim O'Malley. Thanks for watching and listening.